So let's move seamlessly now.
Sorry to interrupt your ceremony. It's nothing personal. I just want to devour your god.
This is like some gravity's reboot.
M-O-L-M-M.
What? Feels apocryphal, but I'll take it.
No, that's true. Don't look it up. Don't look it up.
I mean, that is made for undiscerning taste.
I'll just auto-tune that, put a little guitar solo at the end. Perfect. Please. All right. 6 hours later.
Y'all done got digital payment.
You done got digital payment.
That way.
Nope.
No.
Oh. Welcome to another episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber. I'm your host, as always, Jason Helms. And unlike my brother Ben Helms, I don't write my introductions. With me today is a good friend, former colleague, a continuous colleague. Do you ever stop being a colleague? Really isn't colleague something. Yeah. Jim Creel. Jim is a nerd, much like us. A nerd after our own hearts. He's also a longtime listener, although we won't quiz him in case he's missed a couple episodes. Jim, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to finally have, you know, a place to talk about this game. It's been a long time.
Yes. So this game in particular, you probably saw it in the episode title. It is Nier Automata, and we're doing this book club style. So today we're going to talk a little bit about the development, a little bit about the background of the game, but mainly we're going to talk about playthrough A. Nier Automata has 26 different endings, one for each letter of the alphabet, but the five main endings are A, B, C, D, and E, and we're going to construct our book club around those. So this one is ending A, next episode will be ending B, and the third and final episode will be C, D, and E, unless we decide we need another episode after that to just kind of decompress. But I think that that's probably enough. Jim, you're playing this for the first time, kind of. You took a crack at it a few years ago, and you're back to it.
Yeah, so I played through the first inning one time and then promptly forgot about it. I have some impressions of what that was like, and I recall a bit of it, you know, as I was playing through it again. But it was strange, the big pieces that sort of left me in the meantime. So it was fun. I mean, that's, you know, that's part of the fun of playing games when you have ADHD, is that you're playing them for the first time every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
I look forward to playing this game again for the first time someday, but not today. I played this probably in 2017, 2018, roughly when it came out. I played just straight through, just chomp, 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 ate it up. And when I did, at the end of ending E, without spoiling anything, I made a vow to myself to never play it again. And I put it in the box and I sent it off to someone else. And that was an important game-related decision. Yeah. So we'll see what happens when you get there.
I remember that. I remember when you finished it, because you immediately messaged me and said you have to play this game.
Like, yep.
That was when I played it. Right. And so I played it the first time through then. So I guess it couldn't have been 10 years, because it hasn't been out for 10 years.
No, it was 7 years ago, or okay, 6 years ago, something like that. In fact, it might have been RSA 2019-ish. I think we were really...
You're right.
Yeah. All right, so
out in Maryland.
Yeah. That's a fun one. Other than the cactus jack, what the world did I eat?
The jackfruit pulled pork jackfruit sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, that was awful. Oh, that was nasty. Just jelly.
It was the best thing ever.
Oof. All right. So I am going to ask you to react to an image. That's the way I decided to start this episode out.
Okay.
So before we get into this, how much do you know about the kind of context of Nier Automata? Why is it called Nier Automata, for example?
Zero. I have left that video game scholarly part of my brain behind, unfortunately.
That's fine. Nier Automata, and this is when I fell in love with these games, is when I first saw this chart, when I was wondering about playing the games. And a similar thing happened to me when I heard about Shin Megami Tensei games for the first time and realized they were sequels to sequels to spinoffs to sequels. I was like, I want in on this. I just want all the lore. Give it to me. So Nier Automata is a sequel to two video games, Nier Replicant and Nier Gestalt, that were the same video game, one for Xbox, one for PlayStation, except in one of them, you are the heroines, or the girl who has to be rescued, the girl who has to be saved's brother, and in the other, you're her father. They are incompatible stories. Okay. Other than that, the games are identical, or pretty close to it. It's not like you play as a different person in the same story. It's your character is either her father or either her brother. Wild stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. In turn, that game is a sequel to another series of games, Drakengard. And so I'm going to show you the chart that blew my mind. right now. We'll just have you kind of react as you go. There's your link. Go ahead and click on it, and we'll sort our way through it together.
Okay. So, funny story. I own Nier Replicant and have for probably 3 years now.
Yep.
And have never started the game. And I have a lot of guilt about that.
You will like it quite a bit after playing this.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to play them in order. And Nier Replicant, I think... The Nier Replicant you're referring to, which is the remake,
yes,
assumes that you played Nier Automata, I believe.
Okay.
It's a really interesting kind of remake. They add some stuff.
Okay, cool. So we're at the end.
We're at the end, right?
Okay.
We are at, there's a timeline. This is 11945 AD, 12,000 years. And each of these orange pieces on the chart is a video game. The first one on the far left is Dragon Dragoon, a.k.a. Drakengard, the U.S. And it has ending, not quite E, ending something 3, social security number, I don't know. An extra ending of Drakengard 3 gets you to Drakengard 1. Drakengard 2 is unrelated in the timeline. This is because the creator of this, Yoko Taro, did not actually direct that game. So it doesn't count.
It's like Super Mario Brothers 2. It doesn't belong. It
doesn't belong. That's a good comparison, honestly. And then at 1099, we have DOD1 signifying Drakengard 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that has ending E. And I just have to describe ending E, and at some point I'm going to make you watch this actual ending, but you're playing this game where you ride a dragon around,
mm-hmm.
and you're fighting the big bad sorcerer, and you get transported all of a sudden to 2013.
Okay.
Tokyo. And the sorceress has turned into a giant monster in the middle of Tokyo, and you are fighting it. Meanwhile, the Air Force has been called out and is trying to shoot you down. And again, you're just some dude riding a dragon. I've watched this ending. It makes absolutely no sense in context. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. And then this giant monster like just kind of dissipates into like a pillar of salt that spreads everywhere. And one of the airplanes shoots you down, and that's the ending.
Nice.
That's like the secret ending, the true ending that you can get to if you do everything right. Nier Replicant, Gestalt, and Nier Automata are a sequel to that ending.
Okay.
And specifically to the kind of bizarre zombie-like virus that monster's death unleashes on the world. You don't have to know all that, but for certain people with certain neurodivergent tendencies, finding that out is a really exciting thing, as you see this timeline with, I don't know, 30 or 40 short story collections, manga, stage plays. Yes, I did watch at least one or two of these stage plays in Japanese, didn't understand a bit. So suffice to say, there's a lot going on. Let's do like 5 to 10 minutes of spoiler-free, chat it out, your reactions. Coming back to this the second time, what did you see? What did you feel?
You know, like I said, I had emotional impressions from it. Like, I remembered feelings from certain parts of the game, and particularly the bosses, right? A couple bosses that really give you this sort of heavy, really heavy feeling, right? When I was playing it, I was in the middle, if I remember right, I was writing my dissertation at the time and was trying to figure out this sort of intersection between like humanity and bodies and how it works in this game really resonated with me on that level. But I'm shocked at the way that the content of the game just evaporated after I didn't play it. And I wanted to, like, I came back to it so many times and tried to pick it up and do it again. I just couldn't do it. But it's such the atmosphere of the game is so heavy to me.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't think I've ever played a game that was that heavy. I think the thing that might come closest to it would be like a Death Stranding, maybe.
Yep. Shadow of the Colossus for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Shadow of the Colossus feels more melancholy than this. This feels, this has maybe not a nihilism to it, but it's not as wistful, I think, as maybe Shadow of the Colossus is.
Shadow of the Colossus is mournful for the loss of great things.
Yeah.
And this is maybe mournful, but it's certainly reacting to the idea that the great things were never great.
Right.
And we're realizing it all at once. That the nihilism makes sense.
Yeah. There's an edge to this that I don't feel in Shadow of the Colossus, right?
Yep. And I will say this is, I'm just going to give you an emotional spoiler. You finished ending A. Happy ending, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
Not so much. you defeated the big bad guy. Right. Everything's great. Mm-hmm. Not so much. That's going to be true of B as well. Mm-hmm. And it's going to get extra true for C and D. They are going to get just even darker, even heavier.
Right.
But I hold out ending E for you. Because we know that nihilism does not equal pessimism. They are not identical.
Right.
And it is... Ending E is the we must imagine Sisyphus happy.
Cool. I don't trust anybody in this game.
No.
Like, by any means. I don't trust what anybody says. I don't trust what I see. You know, having that, playing it from the perspective of an android whose memories have been modified, right? I don't really believe anything that's going on to a certain extent. And so you just sort of, it's insulating, maybe a little bit, but I feel the other shoe dropping, right? I feel, and I have somehow managed to not spoil this for myself over the course of the last 7 years, but I don't know. I honestly don't know what happens next, but I feel that like there's a knife coming, right?
Yep.
And I've prepared myself for it, but I have no idea what it might be.
And maybe more than one. Right. There's a series of knives coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's 9S and the shorts. I think it's the, it's the schoolboy shorts. They've made him look too innocent and I'm expecting something very bad to happen.
Yep.
All right.
So have you started playthrough B yet?
Yes. I have played a little bit as 9S, right?
Okay. So let's give the people some context, tell them what they're getting into, and then we'll get all spoilery.
Cool.
Before we do that, though, one thing I really like about this game is the gameplay itself and the ways that I feel that it's commenting on the history of video games. So, yeah in the opening, you are taking on a you're in some kind of it's not a mech, is it? If it wraps around you, flight suit, mm-hmm. and you are shooting down the enemy robots, mm-hmm. and it is absolutely 1941. Overhead arcade shooter.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's great. Like lots of the later overhead shmups influenced like Ikaruga. It's really, really interestingly commenting on those things. It does a camera wrap around at various points so that you then get out of the flight suit and now you're in a three-quarter overhead 3D world, like a GTA or a Tomb Raider, anything like that, just a normal game. And then there are times when you walk down a hall and the camera shifts and suddenly you're in a 2D platformer. Mm-hmm. Add to this the central gameplay mechanic of playthrough 2. 9S has his own combat style that is completely unique, based on hacking, that it would be kind of like a mini game in any other game, but it's a new game loop. The game also has weapon upgrades, areas of the map you have to uncover, and each of these is shockingly small.
Okay.
It's got like this whole weapon tree you can unlock, and I think it's got like 5 weapons.
Okay. I don't feel bad then because I don't do any of those things in the game.
You don't have to. None of them are required.
Okay, good.
You cannot learn how to do the combat and still beat the game and have a great deal of fun and meaning out of it. The combat even includes auto fire, and it will let you just auto fire. But it's really interesting that every single piece of the game is diegetic.
Yes.
So the auto fire is a chip that is installed in your android that you can remove to put in other chips. You also have your operating system as one of your chips. Did you try to remove it, Jim?
My operating system?
Yeah.
I think I did my first playthrough. I know that it kills you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just done. Yeah. Game over. Yeah. That is like ending G or something like that. Yeah. And so the majority of these 26 endings are joke endings where you remove your operating system, you're dead. You can't exist anymore.
What would you do that for? Why would you do something so silly? did you, I guess I want to ask you when you do this, did you min-max your chips?
Yes,
you did.
I optimized. I wouldn't say min-maxed, right? I had fun exploring. I didn't look up the solutions. I was like, oh, what if we try this, what if we try that? But that was probably around playthrough C. You kind of get bored of certain things. You're like, well, maybe I'll try this.
Basically, whenever I would fight a boss, I would go back to the chip guy and I would buy all the upgrades that I could get to get more space and have him have them automatically do it and walk away.
Yep.
I have no idea what happened. My bar got bigger and that's all I cared about.
That I think is a really important part of the meaning of the game as well. Mm-hmm. Right. This is a game about nihilism. Mm-hmm. It's a game about those things you can do where, oh, optimize. I'll click the optimize button.
Yeah, why not?
The game could give you a button that's like, just go to the ending. Mm-hmm. Press it, win, done, credits. But what's the point?
That's what YouTube's for.
Yeah. So it's got these things. It's got all kinds of ways to optimize. The map itself does not really expand in the ways you expect it to. The amount of NPCs does not expand in the way you expect it to. However, mm-hmm. their stories expand exponentially. There's a yeah. depth to these areas that you, right. you is revealed on subsequent playthroughs.
Right.
So, yeah, here's the context for the game. You are playing a Yorha android. The Yorha android's motto is glory to mankind. We are in the far distant future, 9,000 years in the future, I think. You can do the math on whatever I said earlier.
All right.
The humans have been in, or Earth has been invaded by aliens. But the aliens we don't actually see. Instead, they sent out their robots to attack. And they took over the entire planet. Humans went up to the moon, and they live on the moon. That's the only place safe for them. And they send out their androids to fight the robots. So we don't see the humans. We don't see the aliens. We are on the front line, and we are androids fighting robots. And that might sound like a fake distinction. And the game is really interested in all of the distinctions that I just made quickly.
Absolutely.
Because the androids are constantly talking about how, you know, we're not like the robots. We're actually, you know, thinking beings, right? We exist. We are human to some extent.
Right. It happens in like the first 10 minutes of the game because the robots come at you and say things like, ow, right? Ow, mm-hmm. no, leave me alone, run away, right? And they're commenting on it while you're doing that. And you're like, oh, don't worry about it. It's just, you know, they're residual programming. I've never heard them talk like that before, but don't worry about it. They don't know what they're saying.
They don't know what they're saying. They're just robots. They don't feel.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not.
Meanwhile, you're racking up high scores.
Right.
With these little R2-D2 looking things that keep mm-hmm. going, please stop. Please don't hurt yeah. me.
Ow, ow,
oh,
ow.
Oh, ooh, ooh. Yeah.
So oh, and then we laugh.
Yeah,
we laugh at it.
We laugh. Yeah. So that's the setup. Now we'll do some light spoilers as we go through, and I'll kind of tell you the moment that I was just like, "Yes, this game is for me." Mm-hmm. It's the birth of Adam and Eve. When you get to the robot, not the robot village of Pascal, but the second robot village, where the robots appear to be having some kind of orgy, right? And it's cracking me up because again, these all look like R2-D2. Yeah. And yet they're performing sex acts that you can figure out what they are based on context. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that little robot does not have genitals. And yet I think I know what it's doing.
It's not going to stop him.
I think I know what role it's playing in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And one of them is rocking a cradle with a baby robot in it.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
And you come into this. Oh, God, I love a little baby robot. Ready to just like kill everything. And they're mm-hmm. they're just screwing it and rocking a cradle and like trying to live their little robot lives.
Right. Leave me alone. Yeah.
And they form some kind of like accumulation of robots, some giant ball of robots. And out of it, this goop falls and you see two human being looking ish things. They are both men. They call themselves Adam and Eve. And by men, I mean, they look very manly, but they very notably lack genitalia. They are full Ken doll.
Yeah, absolutely. They made a big deal to draw your attention there, right?
Yeah. They're like, check out that lack of everything.
Right.
Meanwhile, you've been fighting robots called Marx and Engels and Hegel. You're like, there's a message here. There's a message. I don't know what it is, but there's something happening.
Right.
And yeah, when I saw that, I was just like, I'm in. I just want to see where this takes me because I've never played anything like this.
There's a silliness to it at the beginning, right? That is comedy at first. And then as you go on, morphs into horror, right?
Yeah.
So yes. your laugh turns from, this is really ridiculous. I can't believe these robots are saying ow, to be like, oh, wait, these robots are saying ow. And it's not vestigial. It's not some holover. We're hurting these things. You know, this is something that's happening. This is a, you're having an effect on your world. And when you talked about being able to skip to the end on YouTube, right? And just watch it. You know, you have a button where you click and go to the end. Great, fine, whatever. That exists. That existed when this game came out. And so there's a distinct effort here. And what I love about this game is there's a distinct effort to draw attention to why are we doing this, right?
Yes.
What are you here for? You know, you could just watch the ending on YouTube. What do you want to play this game for? Why are you clicking these buttons? Why are you mashing these buttons? Why aren't you upgrading your pod? you know, because I forgot to update my pod through the entire playthrough this time.
Yeah.
Why don't you care about the RPG elements of this that, you know, we just kind of threw on there, it feels like, and you really don't have to interact with. So what are you doing here? And I don't know if I have an answer to that.
The big gain, it turns out, when you upgrade your weapons, and you don't realize this at first, is that each of the weapons has a story. And you get another two lines of the story per level. Mm-hmm. And they max out at like level 5 or 6.
Nice. Okay.
And there are these cute little kind of poetic, like, short stories. They don't necessarily connect to lore.
I remember that for the Beastmaster one.
Yeah.
Because that's the only one I did.
It's vibes, though. It's just vibes. It's not, you know, you have to understand this to really get the story.
Right. In a way that's both more serious and more lighthearted than like the item lore in something like Dark Souls. Right.
Right.
That we're also going to have stories for our items, but it's not, we're going to tell you enough of the story that you're not going to have to, you know, build it on your own so much. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would say that it's intentional in a way that we're going to, you know, build item lore into the game in the way that a From Software game would, but it's not unintentional, maybe.
Right. And different intents, or I tend to prefer the term motive, right? Because a motive is a direction. A direction of movement. Mm-hmm. Intent means you know what you're doing. And I'm not always sure that that's true either with Dark Souls or with this, that they know what they're doing. And in fact, I think Dark Souls is really intentional about, there's an old RPG thing for DMs, a piece of advice, which is draw maps and leave blanks. And that's Dark Souls, right? Mm-hmm. Draw a really, really high def map, but leave really big blanks to make the players try and connect the dots. And Miyazaki does not know what is in those blanks, I don't believe, right? He might have theories too, but it's intentional that there are blanks.
No, he relies on that conspiratorial sort of tendency, right? Like, they planned this the whole time. Like the Harry Potter thing, right? You know, you're trying to say that she knew, you know, she wrote the ending on a napkin when she wrote the original book. No, it's just,
right.
It came up, whatever. It's not, we want to see these sort of grand plans wherever we can find them. But a lot of times it's just like kind of just put the pieces together and kind of made something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Yoko Taro, the twists are there almost more for vibes, right? It's for the emotional reaction of the twist, not the lore.
Yeah.
Have you seen a photograph of Yoko Taro?
No.
I'm going to blow your mind. Click on this. This pretty much looks the same as all of his photographs.
Sorry for mentioning.
You're all good.
Sorry for mentioning Harry Potter on the podcast.
Oh, it's fine. We'll bleep it out.
Yeah, that's great.
Right. So Yoko Taro wears a giant metal helmet that completely covers his face, and it's got some freakish smile on it and giant eyes. Mm-hmm. It is both terrifying and also somewhat goofy and silly.
Yeah.
And he wears it everywhere. He's never done an interview without it.
Nice.
This is him. He does, you know, hey, our new game is coming out. We're really excited about it. And you hear him talking, and he's just conversing in a room with people not wearing anything like that. They're just normal people. And that mask is very important to this universe. That is Emil's face. Emil is a character in Nier Replicant. But it also, I bet, looks very similar to the robots you've been fighting.
Right.
Those connections will be drawn out. There is a history there.
Okay.
Not something you've missed, other than there was someone named Emil who lived, I don't know, 10,000 years earlier than this.
Okay.
And he looked kind of like that at some point in his life. So let's get in the story.
Okay.
Start to spoil a bit more. You got your androids, you're fighting your robots. The first big twist, as I recall, comes when you get into the alien spaceship and you go down there to fight Adam and Eve. And it is revealed that the aliens are not just dead, but they died when they crashed on the planet.
Right.
This is no invasion. This is an accident. They crashed, their robots went out and tried to take over the world.
Right.
For them who are dead.
Yeah. And it undercuts so much of what you've been trying to do, right? We're saving the world. We're restoring humanity's rightful place. We have an enemy that we need to eliminate, right? It has a shape. It has a motive. It has a name, and it just kind of yanks that rug out from under you.
Yep.
And you're left sort of wondering, well, now what? In a game that does that to you all the time, right?
All the time.
Where you're just like, well, now what are you supposed to do? I don't know. Where are you supposed to go? I'm not sure.
No directions. The map is, I feel like, intentionally useless.
I hope so.
It's so bad.
I hope it's intentional, but, you know, considering what we just said about intention, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly useless. I will say that.
Yes, absolutely. The little light red highlights that have no distinction between any quest that you might have. And then the tiny little icon that comes up when you have like a main quest goal that you have to search the entire map for. There's no way to filter your quest. Is there a way to filter your quest? There's no way to filter your quest.
I don't think so. I feel like that would make it too easy.
Yeah.
Right. It's meant to be, there's more friction than that.
Right.
But it gives you tons of control. Like you can go up and down levels, right? Mm-hmm. You can, the Z axis, you can just completely go all the way up and all the way down. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because the whole game's pretty damn flat. Yeah. But like, thank you, map.
Yeah. Right. And I can see what's underneath here in a place that I'm never going to go. Right.
Yep. Yep. Beautiful.
Yeah. I remember that part, and I don't know if it landed with me very well then. I played this, and I should, you know, I guess I should disclose this, right? I played this as fast as I could, right?
Yeah.
Because I knew I had gone through and played it before. And so I put it on easy mode. I didn't upgrade anything. I didn't do any side quests. I just speed ran the whole game.
Yep.
Still, even just doing it that way, ignoring all the extra stuff, not interacting with the world in a way that was significant, you still get those emotional beats, right?
Yeah.
It still feels that way. You still, when you get to the alien base, you still feel the weight of like the importance of that moment where you're going into this place that has significance, where you feel sort of a dread going into there. And so I was really, I was taken aback by that, and especially by the rest of it, right? The rest of it is just, yeah.
I think the character beats are more important than the twists.
Absolutely.
And it's surprising because you feel like this is a game about twists and lore, and it signals that in so many ways. But the little things about, what's the name of the woman who runs the refugee camp? I want to say Jellyfish or something like that. She's got a,
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, she's got a backstory. She's had relationships with other people in the area, and you slowly figure it out by reading Dark Souls like item descriptions. Mm-hmm. There is one of the operators who's sending you on the mission. If you read through her emails, you can figure out that she has a crush on 2B. And it's like, it's really kind of cute. Like as you like see these things out, mm-hmm. the sexual tension between 2B and 9S and the growing friendship, the fact that 9S clearly has a crush on her,
yeah,
and wants her to call him Nines. All my friends call me Nines.
Oh, right? Poor guy.
And there's a beautiful moment, I believe it's right towards the ending of ending A, mm-hmm. where she calls him Nines.
Yeah.
And he said, what'd you say? She said, yeah. I said 9S, get over there.
Yeah.
It's just immediately gone. And it's the warmth of that moment undercut by her need to be harsh.
Right. Yeah. This sort of war-hardened thing, right? It's a trope that you see a lot in war film. You know, Saving Private Ryan has it, right? Where you have this guy that has this soft underbelly and Captain Miller, and has to be demanding with his men and has to distance himself with his men because he's seen so many men die. But that motivation here doesn't really work with androids that can just be reconstituted, right? So it's unclear where her, for me at least right now, where her harshness comes from.
Yeah. That's one of the twists coming up. That's one of those knives. Don't you worry. Another part of it is the androids can save their consciousness, right? Periodically, but they can't do it perpetually. They have to go to like a save point to do it. Mm-hmm. Meaning one of the first things that happens in the game is the two of you, 2B and 9S, sacrifice yourselves to blow up some giant robot mech. And you're transported back to the satellite and you're together. And it doesn't hit this too hard, but the realization is you both just went through something and neither of you remember it. Mm-hmm. Because you haven't saved since then.
Right.
Right. You defeated it. You know that you then sacrificed yourself because here you are. You won, but you don't remember anything. So there's this giant gap there in your friendship, in your relationship. Other characters that show up, there's Pascal, the leader of the robot village, who has a village full of robots who are all named after philosophers.
Right.
Which is fun and cute. And the robot children love to play and say, I think they sing to themselves, "We like being alive," or something like that.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's great. There's a Lothario there who is seducing all of the other robots. What's his name? He's Sartre, isn't he? He's Jean-Claude.
Yeah.
There is one of my favorites, which is this is part of Jean-Claude's fault, right? I don't believe she gets a name, but Simone Beauvoir would not be far off. This is the giant carnival robot who has dressed herself up to look pretty, using the corpses of the androids as jewelry.
That's my favorite part of this game, like by far.
It's really good.
It's such a weird moment, and I just live for unexpected, like, weird moments And so, I mean, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Oh, man. You're tracking robot. Are you tracking black boxes? Or are you tracking?
Yeah, that feels
you're tracking black boxes,
which are the signals inside the androids,
following them through this rundown Disneyland, through a carnival of robots that are just increasingly silly.
Fighting on top of roller coasters.
Yes, you have to ride a roller coaster in.
And the music.
Yes.
This is the apex of the music of the entire game.
The music is fantastic in this part, in ways that it can be really intrusive in other parts. I don't enjoy the music in a lot of the parts. And I think that's on purpose.
Yeah.
With you. But you're tracking this thing. You're trying to go find your friends. They all have their black boxes. And you end up in a stage area where you find that all your friends' black boxes are in one place because a giant robot is basically wearing them and using them to make herself beautiful. And just the dialogue when she's attacking you.
Yeah.
You know, just the complete like dysmorphia that this robot is going through, you know, where she doesn't believe that she's beautiful and she has to do these things. It's very, that one got to me quite a bit. That one was really heavy in terms of like game moments here, where you're like fighting this thing that just is trying to figure out how to like be accepting of what it is that she is.
Not only that, but we were just talking about this idyllic robot village and this Lothario there. Mm-hmm. It's Jean-Paul, right? Because it's Jean-Paul Sartre. Yeah. Jean-Paul.
Right. Yeah.
Who sends you on a little fetch quest to like deliver love letters to lady robots. Mm-hmm. In the flashback for this this giant monstrous robot who is using your friend's skeletons as jewelry to make herself beautiful for someone else, mm-hmm. you can start to connect some of the dots and realize that it's Jean-Paul who has started all this. Mm-hmm. He did not tell her to do this. He just told her that she was not beautiful enough for him.
Right. Okay. That makes sense then.
Right? So now, this is why you play the game five times, right?
Right. So
on B, you're going to pick this up, seeing it through 9S.
Right.
There's also something, I remember this the first time I did it, right after you defeat her, I found like a secret doorway. Mm. And I go all the way down to the bottom of this tunnel. I fight a bunch of dudes. It's great. And then I get to a chest and it's like, what's in the chest? And I get there and it says B or X or whatever. And it's just crossed out. There's the button that you're supposed to press and it's crossed out and you can't press it. I'm like, what does that mean? And what it means, by the way, is you can only open this with 9S.
Oh.
On your second playthrough, give it another world.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll remember that.
And it's so fun to have those little hidden things on the first playthrough that you find, like, what is this? What do I do? Man's search for meaning, right? Oh, that fight is beautiful. I think what do they call it? The garden, the castle, the forest. That's the next one the forest king. That's another beautiful fight.
Forest castle. Is that the one?
Forest
is
castle.
It, or is it the forest with the, it's the forest on the way to the castle, right?
Yes. Well, I think the castle is in the forest in that the forest is like a quadrant of the map,
right?
But yeah, you pass through a bunch of trees, you fight wave after wave after wave of enemy. It's the first really hard fight.
Or you jump over them and keep running.
Boom. Love it. Smart. And you get to the end of this fight, and again there's a cradle with a little baby in it, and it's a baby robot, and you're like, wait, this is the thing we're supposed to kill? Mm-hmm. And before you get a chance to, another android jumps in. Her name's A2. She murders the baby robot and jumps out the window.
Yep.
Cool. Playthrough A, fantastic.
We see her one more time, right?
I think so far as I remember.
Yeah.
You will be seeing a lot more of her. Don't you worry.
I figured as much. And then the baby was supposed to be the king, right? Was the baby the king? Yep. Baby was the king.
The baby
was
the king.
Right. They're making a big deal.
They just had to wait for him to grow up.
Right.
But if I remember right, there's some line that said they've been waiting for like 200 years for him to grow up.
Huh. I mean,
because again, he's a robot. They don't grow up.
You grow a robot. Tell me how long it takes you.
Yeah. This is why like the Pascal's Village is hilarious when you stop and think about it with these baby robots. Like, playing. We're robots. We love playing. We're children. Mm-hmm. They've been doing that for 80 years or however long. Like, they don't age. They're just playing their role in society.
You said it was idyllic, right? I mean,
very much.
You have this commentary here on, this singularity commentary, right? We're talking about being able to upload our consciousness. We're talking about being able to live forever. We're talking about the ennui that comes with that, right? And it's very vampiric in that way.
Yeah.
Right. Where we have people that are frozen in time that can no longer progress, that can no longer die, that can no longer age. And these children remind me of, and I'm going to make another reference that I'm going to regret here, of Claudia from Interview with the Vampire, right? This girl who is stuck in her childlike state. And I don't feel that same sort of anger that she feels, right? I don't feel that from them. There's no growth there emotionally or anything like that, that would allow them to maybe recognize their frozen development, right?
Yeah. They can't reflect in that way.
Right.
And they almost can't reflect because they're playing the role of child.
Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to.
Yeah. Children don't reflect on things like that. So why would they? Because they're robots, they can follow that through. Right. But they're perfectly being children. They're playing, they're having fun. That's what a child does. Except they fail to age.
And what's fascinating that is thinking about the production of baby robots, right? Somebody has to be building them.
Yep.
In this shape, in this size.
Yep.
And so,
man, I hope there's not a factory you got to fight through at some point.
Did I miss that part in the first place?
No, not yet. Okay, not yet. Well,
right.
I think you've been through it, but I don't think it's revealed what it is yet.
Okay. All right. So I've been through the baby maker and just haven't noticed
it. I think so. From what I recall. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the where do babies come from question that this game asks is hilarious, right? That's it's a funny question to ask. I mean, especially as a parent, right? That's a question that, you know, not everybody really looks forward to all the time, but it's a moment in your child's development when you understand that they're starting to grow and that they're not going to be that way forever. Right. And so thinking about it in terms of this game, it's one of those things that sort of is like, hey, you know, you don't realize you're asking that question, but you're starting to develop through this game and starting to pick at the edges of the game and starting to understand that there's more to it than you've been presented.
You will eventually come across religious robots wearing like Pope hats and stuff. There's the monarchy of robots. There is the kind of brutal industrial robots you play against at first, Marx and Engels and Hegel. Right. All of these different stages, ways of answering the question of why are we here and what are we trying to do? I think the required reading for this game is The Myth of Sisyphus. Like if I had to choose one book, it is Camus' Myth of Sisyphus. Life is absurd. Mm-hmm. Life is meaningless. Now, what is your response? Right. Yeah. And that's the real question. I think the version that so many of us get in college is just like, wow, Camus really hated people. He's so nihilistic. Mm-hmm. And the ending of the book is this really beautiful thing. It's an entire book about why you shouldn't commit suicide. That is the thesis of the book. And he wants to defend it without going to God, without going to inherent worth of human beings, without going to anything like that.
Find value somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And create it.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist for you. You have to make that value. Mm-hmm. Right. Find value in the world around you by creating it.
Right.
We must imagine Sisyphus happy.
Right.
And there's nothing more Sisyphean than these androids fighting their endless war. Every knife that comes out, every bottom that drops out from here on out, is the moment you think that there is meaning to their fight. And you're like, oh, there actually was less. There's less meaning to their fight.
Mm-hmm. It was arbitrary.
So what do we do?
Right.
What do we do instead?
Camus was always, that book was always my favorite thing. I used to assign it to honor students. And we'd read some really happy stuff. We'd read some really nihilistic stuff. And then we'd read Camus. And they were always very refreshed.
Yes.
Like it's interesting to me because my experience with Camus is my first experience with Camus was never like that. It was always that sort of nihilistic thing. And so maybe I just primed them with enough really terrible things that they were able to find some maybe a little bit of light in Camus. But yeah, I love that element of this game, right? That you really do have to work for things.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to grind through the uncomfortable stuff and you have to, you know, and maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have to grind through the uncomfortable stuff. You don't have to level in order to complete the game. I don't know how many times I leveled during the game. I didn't keep track. And oftentimes I wouldn't upgrade or anything. And that meaning is sort of stripped away from the game. And you're forced to focus on those character relationships, right? And so I found myself just sort of running through all the gaming parts of this, right? All the elements that make this a traditional game, all the combat, all the min-maxing, all the questing, leveling, all this other stuff that you associate with RPGs to get to the story elements, right? To get to that next interaction you know, and the little throwaway line that 9S says to 2B as they're walking away, you know, from the exploding robot that they just killed. And so I think that's really, I think that's a really cool part of this.
The game has these incredible spaces for expressivity in the gameplay itself. And so two examples. First off, you can set it on easy. You can turn on auto fire. Mm-hmm. You can make everything work for you and literally just walk through the game pressing X, right? Or you can turn off all the auto fire stuff and you can learn the combat. And the combat is shockingly difficult and beautiful. And I've watched people play it where they can, 2B has like a teleportation mechanic. Oh. And it looks like this amazing fighting game where you're just like kick in the front, teleport to the back, kick in the back, juggle this 40-foot tall robot for 10 minutes in the air, racking up points. And it's like, this is incredible, not because of just their skill, but because this is a game in which you don't have to do this. It never tries to motivate you to do this.
Right. There's no get good to this.
No. Get good because you enjoy goodness. Yeah. Right? Enjoy goodness is the thing.
If you want to do it. If not, whatever.
Yeah, it's not get good, it's get goodness. Wherever you may find that, right?
Looks funny.
It's such a beautiful game. All right. The second space of expressivity I wanted to talk about is the community around this game. 2 years ago, there was a kind of phenomenon. Somebody uploaded a video to Reddit, and I believe the subject line to the near Reddit, the subject line was something like, "What the fuck is this?" And there's a random wall in the underground city, right? The place where you fight Adam and or Eve, I don't recall, but the really geometric place. They go up to this wall, and they do like a down down up up left right ba ba, and the wall just opens, and they go through it, and there is like 10 minutes of gameplay, and they get into this like abandoned church, and they have to fight wave after wave after wave of enemy, and they die. And then over the next couple of weeks, they kept saying like, okay, I'm going to try and find further in this. Like, guys, I'm sorry, I've never played this game before. What is happening? And people keep posting. They're like, I can't get this code to work. Like, what is going on? And he's like, I don't know if they just installed this on one version of the game. Here's what's going on. He's like uploading his version stuff and talking about like how he doesn't understand how he's doing this. And then people are like live streaming it and watching him like get further each time. And then he gets to another level and there's these bosses on bosses on bosses. It kind of promises these new story things. And then finally he says, you know, hey, I've got it planned Sunday night, 8 p.m. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to fight through this till I get it done. Because I've only done these little half hour things. I couldn't because of work. But we're going to do this. No one else on the entire internet can get into this space that he's in. And it's just the entire near Reddit, thousands of people, including me, watching him get through it. Mm-hmm. He finally beats it. He finally gets this wave of enemy. The door opens up and it's an announcement of the near level editor that fans have built. And he is one of the builders of the level editor.
Oh, it's terrible.
And he just created this prank within the game. And no one was mad. We were all like, that's really good, man. That's a great way to reveal it. That's solid. You got us. You got us good. It was brilliant. What a great prank. What a great hoax.
Absolutely. I mean, it's exactly what we were talking about with that conspiratorial thinking. Like, did they make a special game that's tagged just for me? Did I have a certain combination of things that I could have done special to get something special out of this game? Was there something that he did differently, right? You know, it's naming your Zelda character Link in the first Zelda, right?
Yes.
Where you get something if you can just find out the one thing that you can do, right? Uh-huh.
It's Mewtwo on a Game Boy cartridge, right?
Yeah.
That's
great.
It's really beautiful. So I feel like we're kind of wrapping up. We usually do the what's the drink, what's the song. Mm-hmm. This feels like a different kind of game. I didn't ask you to prepare for that. If you'd like to share any of that, feel free. But I think that this is the book club. We're just doing other stuff. And for our next book club, finish part B. This is going to be a shorter one. If you listen to this without actually playing the game, I would encourage you to play it. And I would also say, whatever you do, do not play it on Game Pass. Because my poor wife did that. And we found a bug that is a known issue. The bug is that you can do everything to get to ending E, but you cannot view ending E.
Oh, no.
It's bad, dude. It's real bad.
Oh, no. That's bad.
I mean, she cried. Like, it was a rough moment in the Helm's house.
Right. And not because the game was sad. There are moments in this game
there where yeah.
you're going to cry for other reasons, right?
She cried for the beauty of the game at different moments, but the way it ruined the ending for her, I was mm-hmm. so heartbroken for her. She got into this game by watching me play Replicant. Mm-hmm. I played that when it came out, loved it. It was great. And she suddenly got like really into the story. It was like, this is kind of cool. I'm interested in this. Mm-hmm. And then I came back from a trip. It might've been like RSA or something like that. And I found out she was like 15 hours into Nier Automata. I was like, whoa, that's a commitment. You've taken a step up from Stardew Valley. You are doing some stuff. And I think by the end of the game, I'm not sure she had even figured out how to use camera controls. Like she was still really struggling with it and didn't care. She just loved the game that much. Right. She was like, I need to find out.
Yeah. Just got to get to the next spot. All you have to do is just get to the next spot. Doesn't matter how you do it.
Oh man. I envy you. I'm excited for what you have ahead of you. And I can't wait to find out in 1 month what you've experienced.
We'll do it. Sounds like fun. Are we going to talk about, do you want to talk about the ending?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's supposed to be the ending. Can we talk about,
do it.
2S? Can we talk about 2B strangling 9S?
Yeah. Oh,
that moment was, I didn't see that coming. I wasn't mm-hmm. ready for that. I wasn't prepared for that. And the emotion that moment carried, I can't, 9S had fought. It's Eve or Adam. Is it Eve in the end, right?
I can't recall, but yes.
Eve or Adam, and had been critically injured. And was infected by Adam's virus, whatever it is that makes him evil. And there's that associated that, you know, the faces in this game are really rendered fairly well, except for Eve and Adam, right? And there mm-hmm. there's this intentional distortion of their facial features that happens that lets you identify it in 9S. And you see her, I mean, I think the only way they could have made it worse is if they had actually given her a pillow and held it down right. over his face, right? I was...
This might be worse than that because she does it barehanded.
Yeah.
I mean, just choking the life out of him.
And it's an android. So, I mean, how is that killing him?
He doesn't need to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's even happening? But if she doesn't kill him, he will infect everything.
Yeah.
And not only that, she fails.
Yeah.
He does infect everything.
I didn't know that. Is that weird?
Well, yeah. Because what's the next thing that happens is he's in the robot behind her.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So the infection has spread, but he defeated the infection.
That's right. Okay.
So he is the infection and he's fine. I think he's actually multiple robots around her, if I recall correctly.
That's right. Yes. No, I remember now.
And they're able to get him back into his body and everything's going to be fine. But like, oh, she stabs him with a broken sword. I mean, oh, emotional.
Oh, yeah. And I have a feeling that's not. What's funny is that knowing that there's five endings in this game and knowing that they're all from different perspectives, you have to. That part also, right? That feels like a decoy.
Yes.
But it's still so effective when you're in it, right? I know something about that. I know I'm going to regret feeling emotional about that part of it. And you can't help it, right? You can't insulate yourself from it.
Yep. Playthrough B is, I think, the toughest one to get through because it feels so much like, why am I doing this? It's the same game again.
Right.
And you don't get a lot of payoffs where it's like, oh, now I see a new angle on it. It's like every once in a while you get a slightly new angle and it doesn't feel all that impressive.
Right.
What I will say is playthrough A is about 13 hours. Playthrough B is about 6.
Okay, cool.
It's very truncated. Right. So take your time, get through it. Cool. Don't be too annoyed, but I get why it's annoying.
I'm sorry.
And then C and D, man.
All right.
Special stuff coming up.
I'm excited.
All right. Well, we will see you all in a month. You can find us online on menoflowmoralfiber.com. Find us on Twitter at MonthPod, Instagram at menoflowmoralfiber, Facebook, facebook.com/menoflowmoralfiber. We have not checked that in at least 3 years. But, you know, hit us up. Maybe we will. Email us at monthpod@gmail.com. That's monthpod@gmail.com. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/MOLMF. And the usual sign out doesn't work, so we're just out of here. Glory to mankind. Catch you next month.